Good afternoon and welcome to the Food Talk Show. My name is Margaret Scully and you are tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM. Each week on this show, I talk to producers, chefs, farmers and people passionate about food. I hope you can stay tuned for the next 30 minutes. If you would like to contact the show, please phone 01 865 8020 or text 087 977 1032. Now, this week on Food Talk, we want to mention two events that are coming up at the weekend. First of all, there's a new museum called the Irish Whiskey Museum, and it's opening this Saturday, November the 8th, and it's on College Green, number 37 College Green. They're running whiskey tours, €15 for adults, seniors and students, 13, and children, €7.50. And there are also VIP tours happening in there. So the opening hours are from 9 in the morning until 8 p.m. And you can find out all about that on the website irishwhiskeymuseum.ie. Now, another event that's coming up this weekend is the annual Slow Food Presents the Wild and Slow Festival down at the Brook Lodge Hotel in Wicklow. There are a number of workshops, events, dinners and a wild food market on the grounds of Macredon Village. I'm just having a look here at some of the workshops. They've got a wild food dinner dissected. Ed Hick, Mick Healy and Evan Doyle focusing on Ireland's recently lost skills regarding how to break down venison, how to pluck game birds and how to hang, and how these will be served at the annual wild food dinner. There will also be a fermentation workshop with JP McMahon from a near restaurant in Galway. There is exploring wild fish, its seasonality, its sustainability and our fisheries management, which has been given by Mick Murphy, who's a licensed traditional wild salmon snap net fisherman. And friends of his are also giving that course. And there's also another one called Black and Blue and Red All Over, Matching Game with Wines Workshop with Noel McMahon. So that's Wild and Slow, and that's on at the Brook Lodge in Macredon Village this weekend. That's November 8th and Sunday the 9th. And there's a website for that, wildandslow.com. Meanwhile, back in Dublin City FM on today's show, I've got my guest in studio, and according to him, an orchard is an intentional planting of trees or shrubs that is maintained for food production. Pear juice, balsamic vinegar, apple juice, wine and cider are among the range of products stemming from Llewellyn's Orchard in North Dublin. Welcome, David Llewellyn and daughter Nuala.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. Now, you've got a lovely lineup here today, David, of
different things from your orchard. Out of my orchard and vineyard, yeah. That's what we started off with. That's what I started off with there now.
So
15 years ago, started growing apples. And it wasn't the plan at the start to go making various other things, but kind of had to because it really wasn't working just wholesaling apples. So I started making apple juice, and that went well. It was only one or two people at the time in the country doing that kind of like quality apple juice, so mine took on very well. And then I progressed on to experimenting with cider making. I'd always kind of been interested in wine making anyway and done a bit as a hobby, so I started making cider. And next, I suppose, started experimenting with turning the cider into vinegar, which is there, the cider vinegar. A little later on, started making balsamic vinegar from apples. Like, you know, not the Italian stuff is obviously from grapes, but you can also make it entirely from apples. And there's nothing like, this is it here now. And there's nothing in that except apples. Nothing.
Like, but very slow aged, does it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but there's no colours, no water, no sugar. It's entirely made from apples, just like the other stuff is made from grapes. And what else here? Oh, yeah, the wine.
We'll talk about the wine in a minute. But the apples, say fresh apple juice, David. What's your shelf life on that?
There's quite a long shelf life because it's pasteurised. So 12 to 18 months normally.
Okay.
You know, once it's basically pressed fresh, and the day after it's pressed, it's filled into bottles and just gently heated to about 70 degrees, and that preserves it. There's nothing, no preservative added to it. You don't need it. You just pasteurise it to 70 degrees, seal it in the bottle, and then it's good for 18 months or so.
And apples, the varieties, do you mix varieties in
your
juice?
Yeah, well, I make three different varieties of apple juice from different, like in three different styles, you know, ranging from sweet to sharp. And for them, I would taste and choose the different apple varieties and mix them according to their flavour and to get the right kind of balance in the bottle, you know.
I get you. Yeah. And so that's where you started off, and then you moved on then to cider, which is a natural progression.
It's a natural progression because, you know, it's actually, all of that is not, if you start off with an apple and if you basically squash it into pulp or into juice, it ferments in itself. You know, if you squeeze the juice out of an apple and leave it sitting there in a container, it will naturally turn into cider without you doing anything to it.
That's if there's air.
Oh yeah, well, it's going to get exposed to the air anyway when you're squashing it.
So your apple juice naturally turns into cider.
Yeah, and that's exactly, you see, what that is, what the pasteurizing of the juice is for, to stop it turning into cider. For it to stay as apple juice, you actually have to preserve the apple juice by pasteurizing it to get it to not turn into cider.
Okay.
And on the other hand, then, if you want to make cider, you can just simply leave the juice sitting, and the yeasts are naturally in the air in the orchard on the skins of the fruit, and they start working on the sugars and fermenting it to alcohol once you leave that apple juice sitting.
And is the vinegar then halfway between the cider and the apple juice?
No, the vinegar is actually the next step.
Oh, it's the next.
Because if you let's say you've got a bucket of apple juice there and you leave that sitting out in a shed, it's going to ferment to cider from the yeast that's in the fruit and on the skins. And in about 2 weeks, that'll actually be cider, or even in a week. It all happens very fast, the cider fermentation. The slow part is the aging and the maturation and the settling, you know, before we would bottle it. But actual alcoholic fermentation is quite fast. And if you leave that sitting further, if you don't drink it as cider and you just leave it in the bucket, after a few months, it'll actually turn to vinegar.
And could you drink it after 2 weeks?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and it's okay.
Yeah, I don't. That's not the way it is now. Bottled there, it's much older. You know, that's 2-3 years old. The cider in the bottle, but in 2 weeks you can drink it as a scrumpy. You know, like a
cloudy.
It would normally be fairly flat. It might be a tiny bit fizzy from the fermentation, but it would just basically be cloudy. It'd be dry. Might be a little bit kind of bitter, or you might call it a little bit bitter, and it'd be naturally alcoholic. But it'd be quite a kind of a rough raw cider. You know,
a rough raw cider.
Yeah, but entirely wholesome and nutritious. That's what people would have drank hundreds of years ago on farmhouses. You know, they would crush the apples, throw the juice into a wooden barrel and let it ferment into a cider, and they'd be drinking that over the winter.
You're in Ireland?
Actually, apparently, yeah, up to now, I'm not good on the history of this, but certainly in the UK, and I think in Ireland there was a lot of farmhouse cider made as well in the big houses. And it would have been given to the workers. Or sometimes the workers would even have been paid in cider, you know.
God bless.
Yeah.
And because I'm from County Leash, and we have an abundance of apples down there. And every year I see orchards full of rotting apples.
You know, that's same all over the country. Yeah.
A fact of life. You know, there's so, and a lot of them are cooking apples.
Yeah.
Are they any good for making cider?
They're not the best because they're very sour. And, you know, you could force yourself to eat a cooking apple, and it's edible, right? There's still sugar in it, but it's quite acidic. But once you actually squeeze the juice out of that and turn it into cider, what you've done is you've gotten rid of all the sugar or any sugar that was in there, and you've turned it to alcohol. And now the acidity in the cooking apple really comes to the fore. And when it's fermented to cider, it's a very sour cider. It's not pleasant.
Very strong and very sour.
Well, it would be normal strength, but in alcohol, but it would be very sour. Very few people would like to drink it. So, I mean, you know, when I make cider, I've got to choose the apple varieties carefully, especially to mix the right amount of low acid apples that will give a nice balance. It's like making wine; it's the same type of process, except you're using apples. So you need the cider to have the right balance in the end.
So the sweeter the apple, the sweeter the cider.
No, that's a total misperception. Everyone thinks
cider
that
and dry cider.
Yeah. But the sweet, that's in the making and in the finishing. A sweet apple will actually just make a strong cider, you know, because it's the sugar in the apple that ferments the alcohol. So that's why wine is stronger than cider, because grapes are much sweeter. Grapes have about 20% sugar in the juice, and apples only have about 12% sugar in the juice, so they don't make a strong drink alcoholically, you know.
That's interesting. And what was I going to say to you? So basically then, how do you make cider, either sweet or dry?
Well, there are different ways of, you know, there are different ways. There's a method called keeving, which is a particular way of fermenting it and getting it to the fermentation to slow down, and so that all the sugar doesn't fully ferment out, and you end up with unfermented sugar in the cider. Fermenting it cold, racking it off, what's called racking off, where in the middle of the fermentation you decant the fermenting cider into a fresh tank or barrel, leaving the yeast behind, and you repeat this process,
okay,
leaving more and more yeast behind, and you kind of get the whole thing to slow down and get it to stop fermenting before all the sugar is gone, so you're left with a bit of what's called residual sugar in the cider.
And have you ever done that?
Yeah, I do that a little bit, but I don't do the keeving. That's quite a specialist art, really, and it's very hit and miss, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're doing a course coming up soon, David. I just want to ask you about that. And yeah, that's up in Sonarta in County Meath.
Yeah, Sonarta is the ecology centre up there. It's between Julianstown and Laytown.
Yeah, it's a lovely place. And,
yes, a lovely
before.
Old garden there. And yeah, I do that every year during the apple harvest season. So the next course, the last course of the year, is in 2 weeks' time, Saturday week.
So tell me what you need to make to go on the course. Like, do you need to have equipment?
No, no.
Your own apples.
It's basically I go through the whole, you know, process of cider making, what kind of apples you need, what you need to do to them, when do you pick them, how do you crush them, and all of that. And we do that up there. I bring equipment with me, and we crush apples, we press them, get everybody to have a try at that if they want. And we do some demonstrations of filling bottles, you know, with the finished cider and all the rest. And at the end of the day, people get a container of the fresh pressed apple juice to take home with them to turn it into cider at home. But like the whole gist of the course really is how kind of simple it is to make cider, you know, and how you can actually manage on fairly simple equipment and very little equipment. You know?
I'm getting the impression. So you don't need demijohns and,
you know, nowadays you don't even need them, because you've got all kinds of perfect, beautiful plastic containers, which are, you know, for mineral water, soft drinks, well, not like Coca-Cola and stuff, but spring water containers made of plastic that are normally just thrown out, and they're perfect for fermenting things in, you know.
5 litre ones.
Absolutely, yeah. And in many ways they're actually better than demijohns. So you can use that, and you need some simple equipment, like maybe a bucket, a jug, a little bit of tubing, and the basic knowledge, and you can make cider, you can make a few gallons of cider for yourself very easily.
But just the pressing then must be the tricky bit.
The pressing is the hard part, and I cover different ways of trying to get around that. So using like a kitchen food processor or grater, and a simple homemade press kind of thing, you know.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. And how would you make a simple homemade press? Just a little taster now, without giving the game away.
Well, there are. The simplest way to make a few gallons is just get an old pillowcase or a tea towel and first grate up the apples into a kind of a fine grated pulp and squeeze the juice, put the pulp into like a coarse cotton cloth, like a towel, and simply squeeze it out, you know, with two people, say, wringing it on either end of the cloth, and you squeeze the juice out, and then you've got your apple juice.
Into a bucket.
Into a bucket, into a container, and you transfer that into one of those spring water vessels, and you don't even need to add yeast, you know, because I said that the yeast
need to leave the lid on it?
To leave the lid loose, because it bubbles needs away. It needs the gas, the carbon dioxide that the yeast makes during the fermentation needs to get out, or you could have a little explosion. so you know, you cover all that, how to avoid explosions and other mishaps like that.
But it really is one of our indigenous drinks, isn't it?
We should be
drinking it.
Yeah, and it is like a proper cider. You know, I mean, we're talking proper cider here. We're not talking factory produced big brand cider that we all know about. That's not cider now, in my opinion.
Okay.
It's proper cider made from apples, not water and colours and sugars,
is actually a
very healthy drink, just like wine is, you know, in moderation.
Absolutely, everything in moderation.
It's like an apple a day, you know, it keeps the doctor away, and you can drink your apples or you can eat your apples.
Exactly. Well, now, David, look, we're actually going to take a little break and have some music, and I don't know if it's apt or it's not, but the title of this song is Duty Free. Stephen Young and the Union, and that was Duty Free. And I'm in studio with David Llewellyn and his daughter Nuala today, and we are talking about wine, apple juice, cider. So, David, we were just talking about making cider there before the music. You also make wine.
Yeah, yeah. That's been a hobby of mine for, I suppose, the last 25 years, really, since I kind of got bitten by the wine bug on a work experience trip to Germany and started off making it as a hobby at home. Planted loads of different grape varieties to try and experiment what might at all ever succeed in Ireland. And when I kind of got to start my own little farm 15 years ago with my own land, which for the first time, because I don't come from a farm, I got a chance to actually plant a vineyard. So that's what I did. And for the last 10 years now, I've 2005 was my first actual production of wine. Very, very small scale. Like, we're talking ultra boutique scale.
Boutique winemaker. Yeah. Extraordinary. So, but one of the few. But I mean, it's taken you years to get the right varieties of grapes and to get to the stage where you probably had enough of them.
And also the whole, like, you know, doing what I do, growing the grapes and making the wine is the kind of complete story. And a lot of wine, most of the wine actually, I suppose, that you would ever buy is grown by a farmer, and it's made by a winemaker, essentially. You know, like, most of the grapes in the world are grown by, but I suppose a lot, and the majority are probably grown by grape farmers, and they sell all their grapes. Just like a farmer here would produce cereal, and he harvests it, and it's offloaded, goes away
off
in trucks.
Mills or wherever,
exactly.
Yeah.
He doesn't go and make the bread. He just grows the grain.
Okay, I get
but, you. You know, and actually that's how most grapes are grown as well. They're grown as a crop and they're sold off in bulk, and then a big cooperative buys the grapes and makes the wine. But when
David, you must be flat out busy up there. Are the family a great help?
Nuala here is a great help. Like, she's only 9 now, and she likes trekking down to the yard and hanging around a little bit as well, and helping out a little bit, sometimes reluctantly, but sometimes very willingly.
Okay, so you have a little army, and do you have staff?
I have a couple of part time helpers, really.
Seasonal, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's basically, by kind of standards, it's a small operation, and it's basically a one man operation I have, you know. But I do have part time help, like at the farmers markets and coming out to do things like labelling bottles and doing work outside in the orchard and that, you know,
for picking the apples and picking the grapes.
So, and bottling and stuff like that. That's occasional kind of jobs that have to be done. So I'm just opening a bottle of this here, Margaret, okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay to
and
do
this
that
is
this
your,
time
your
of the day?
Luska.
This is I call the wine Luska because it's Irish for Lusk, which is the village that I'm just outside. And it's got a nice drawing on the label of the famous Lusk Round Tower.
which I've yet to see myself, even though I'm in Dublin.
The landmark of the... Actually, you know, at the time, 1,000 years ago, when this dates from, Lusk was a far more important place than Dublin was. Dublin didn't really exist at that time. Lusk was actually a centre of kind of monastic, you know, settlement and learning, you know, it was in the past.
So they were possibly, the monks were very good for making whiskey, wine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe they were doing it even back then.
Yeah.
So this here...
It could be a local book fast up your way.
This is my kind of staple at the moment, this wine. It's a red. It's made from Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. And I'm just going to pour a little drop of it here. Want to have a little taste?
Yes, I'll have a little drop, thank you.
Okay. All right, there we go.
Now, for me,
driver. Yeah, I'm not sure I have to drive as well. Now, I am, you know, look, when it comes to making wine and tasting wine, I kind of know what I like and know what I don't like. And if I notice something wrong, and you know, I can pick up stuff, you know, if there's a fault or a flaw, but I'm not great with the words and all the wine tasters' language, you know, and all this stuff. So don't ask me what the bouquet is and the nose and all the rest.
But you're going to tell me, because you did get
I tell you, what I have here is a few notes from, there's a few shops in town now stock the wine, Terroir in Donnybrook, the Celtic Whiskey Shop, Wines on the Green, mm-hmm. on Dawson Street, and who else? Drink Store there in Stony Batter, they have it, and down in Cork, Bradley's have it.
Evan Doyle stocks it.
Evan is great. He's been very supportive over the years. He makes a bit of wine himself. They've vines in their little conservatory area that I planted for them a few years back, and they make their own wine there. But yeah, he stocks the wine on the menu. So will we have a little taste of this? Rather than try to make stuff up myself, I'm going to read out what the Celtic Whiskey Shop have given me for the tasting notes.
Because I don't drink red wine, I told you that.
You don't? Okay.
Sorry about that, David.
I'm reading here now. This isn't coming from my own mouth. This is from a more professional actual writer of tasting notes than me. This is so. Look, what we've got here is, you can see it's quite pale, isn't it? It's not.
Yes.
It's not a bright. It's not a full blood. Deep dark, hot climate wine like a New World or an Australian Cabernet Sauvignon or even a Bordeaux. It's more like a Burgundy. I've always thought myself, and he kind of confirms it here. So anyway, look, on the nose we've got he called on the appearance is pale ruby red with a ruby garnet rim. Don't ask me about that. And on the nose, right, did you smell it there?
Yeah.
On the nose there are aromas of red cherries, raspberries and cranberries with a pleasant hint of strawberries and vanilla. Do you get that?
All of.
And then when you take a little taste, it's quite soft.
It's quite soft and quite light as well.
Let me see what he says about this. On the palate is dry and light medium in body. Gentle tannins and a good acidity help to give the wine a delicate and refined palate. Flavours are similar to the aromas on the nose, with some strawberry, raspberry fruit, red cherries, cranberry, and a touch of creamy vanilla. A light and soft red, which is quite Burgundian in character. That's what he says.
Burgundian in character. Yeah. Well done, David. No, I mean, to me, it tastes like a European red wine. So
I'm very happy with it. That's
good achievement. But you're not going to believe my next bit of news, Felix, that we've actually run out of time.
Okay.
So on that note, I'd just like to say thank you very much for coming in today. And I want to just double check with you, Joe, David, your course. Are there any spaces left on your course?
There's only a couple of spaces left, literally two or three spaces left. Okay. Now, if I get a flood of inquiries, I will actually run a second, an additional
course.
And
that is running in Sonarta on the 15th. That's Saturday, the 15th of November, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, and it starts at 10?
10 o'clock. You know, to be there before 10. It's an all-day thing, 10 o'clock till about 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and apart from that, you can be found at your farmer's markets in...
Yeah, Dunleary on Sundays and Temple Bar on Saturdays. Every Saturday, every Sunday. And we've all our fruit there and all the different bottles that you see in front of you there. We've got, like, it's apple season now. We've full of apples and pears, different varieties.
And you've got your lovely hot spice.
And we've got a hot spice apple juice and apple brandy.
Apple brandy.
Well, yeah. Shot of apple brandy into the hot spiced apple
of
juice.
Of course. Lovely.
Perfect for this weather.
And then all the other activities and information you could possibly need got to do with David Llewellyn and Family and Orchard. Llewellynsorchard.ie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at David, thank you very much. We're actually going to play out today's show with a song from Nuala. But first of all, I want to say thank you both for coming in. Thanks to David and Nuala. And you can listen back to today's show on podomatic.foodtalk.com. Thank you for listening and stay tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM, as coming up next is Mediascope with Ellen Gunning. I'm Margaret Scully and Food Talk will be back next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Until then, have a great week.
I come and take you for the long way round, to pour whiskey for the way, and I sure would like some sweet company as I'm leaving tomorrow. What do you say? When I'm gone, when I'm gone, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. You're gonna miss me by my hair, you're gonna miss me everywhere. Oh, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. I'll come and take you for the long way round, the one with priests of use. It's got mountains, it's got rivers, it's got sights, give you shivers, but it sure will be prettier with you. When I'm gone, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. You're gonna miss me by my wall, You're gonna miss me by my taco. You're gonna miss me when I'm gone.